Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Pennsylvania is a closed primary state, meaning only registered Democrats and Republicans can vote for candidates in their parties who they want to see represent the party in the November election. At a time when more people are registering as independents, those not affiliated with one of the two major parties can't vote in a primary. Republican State Senate President pro tempore Joe Scarnati is proposing to open Pennsylvania's primary to independent voters. Joining us to explain this legislation is WITF's Capitol Bureau Chief Katie Meyer. Katie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott.
If you'd like to weigh in on this, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a tweet on WITF's Twitter account. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So what exactly is Senator Scarnati proposing?
So this bill, as you said, Pennsylvania has closed primaries. So only registered Democrats and Republicans, the two major parties, are allowed to participate, and they cannot cross over. So Democrats vote in the Democratic elections. Republicans vote in the Republican elections. Scarnati's bill would change that in just one specific way. It would let unaffiliated voters participate. Now, they also couldn't cross over, but they could choose the Democratic Party or the Republican Party primary to participate in. So, the thought behind it, as Scarnati has said, is there are a lot of people who are more moderate, who are unaffiliated voters. They don't feel very called by one party or the other or by a third party. And so they cannot participate in primaries. And he thinks that makes the Republican and Democratic delegations more extreme, because people who are very solidly in one party or the other are the ones voting in primary elections. And so he says, you know, the impetus for this is, you know, as Senate President pro tem, he's in a position where he has to get legislation across a finish line. He has to, you know, sort of try to corral support for certain things. And that, he says, is harder and is becoming harder as, you know, lawmakers themselves get more extreme. So they were, you know, voted for by, you know, very far right Republicans. So they are really tough to, you know, sway from that specific line of policy. So Scarnati says maybe this will bring in more moderate voters.
Even maybe you wouldn't get the people who are voting in those parties, those hardcore Republicans or hardcore Democrats, to agree to this. But I think we, and certainly the candidates may not agree, but I think we all have seen instances where a candidate runs, a Republican runs far to the right in a primary, a Democrat runs far to the left in a primary. And then once they become the nominee and they have to attract voters in the middle and maybe even from another party, that they become a little bit more moderate.
Totally. Yeah, I do think you definitely see that. You know, that's a feature of our democracy. I do think that depending on the district you're running in, that's not always the case. And so I think, you know, the thought, and not nobody's saying that this is going to have like a profound or immediate effect, or would if it were passed, effect on the legislature. But, you know, there is a thought that, like, well, if we have you know, the option for a slightly more moderate candidate from the get-go, that'll influence things to some degree.
Just so we're clear, this does not include third party like Green or Libertarian candidates.
No.
Or, excuse me, voters, I should say.
No, it does not. So anybody who's registered in a third party, they are still basically using, like, you know, the petition measures that are in place already for them to get their candidates onto the ballot.
So what do the parties think of this?
Well, it's not really, it hasn't gotten a lot of debate yet, but we know that, you know, there tends to be a lot of really split, you know, thoughts on changing the primary system. You know, I would say it's bipartisan, too. So a lot of Democrats and a lot of Republicans say if you open up the primary to unaffiliated voters, that dilutes it. That gives you more room for your primary to be impacted by people who maybe don't have the best interest of the party in mind, or aren't committed to the party, or, you know, shouldn't have as much of a stake in who that party nominates. And you also, you know, you're hearing a little bit of chatter from Democrats saying, like, Well, you know, Scarnati, in proposing this legislation, mentions, you know, we've saw Republicans move far to the right, and now we're seeing Democrats probably moving farther to the left. We'll know more after November about how far they actually move. But, you know, there's been a little bit of dismay that now is the time that Scarnati wants to make sure everybody's staying a little bit more moderate. You know, his party's been moving right for a while, and now that there's this reciprocal movement on the other side, now it's an issue. So, and I don't know, you know, I can't speak to what his actual motivations are. He says, and his staffers say, this is just something that we need to, you know, maybe address. But in any case, there's definitely a lot of opposition to it. But who knows? I mean, I think there's no question that the parties have become more split. And so there could be a burgeoning number of lawmakers who support this.
You know, I think there is some irony here in that Pennsylvania is a state that doesn't really move quickly when it comes to doing something that is a major change. And, you know, this is not speaking to Senator Scarnati's motivations, but this appears to be something that would be a major change for how Pennsylvanians vote and decide on their candidates. But even then, there's opposition by people who are questioning the motives rather than looking at the proposal itself.
Oh, totally. And, you know, I think you get that with any major legislation that's going to change, you know, fundamentally the structure of how the state does an important process, in this case, voting in primaries. And you're right. We are a state that's sort of back on its heels sometimes. We don't want to be the first to stuff all the time. Pennsylvania, I think generally, if you look at like where we are on major issues, tends to be solidly in the middle or towards the back end of things. So anyway, I mean, yeah, I would say there's obviously precedent for this. There are 9 other states that have like open primary systems, like the one that Scarnati is putting forward right now, where like, you know, unaffiliated voters can participate in whichever primary they choose, but registered voters can't cross over. There's 15 states that have like very open primaries where they don't ask voters to choose a registration. So they can pick privately when they're voting which party they want to vote in the primary for. And then there's other, I mean, there's like lots of different ways to do this. So it's not just like one or the other option. So there's some that have like partially open primaries, some that have like different weird hybrid things. But in any case, it's not like this hasn't been done. It's not like there's not like test cases to look at. What is interesting is looking at states that have switched from a closed primary system to an open primary system and like actually seeing how that's affected, you know, the way that their legislatures vote, the way that they, you know, elect candidates or which candidates they're getting. So there's, I mean, yeah, I think North Carolina is one that like they looked at while making this legislation, and the impact usually tends to be like tough to measure as far as I've been able to see. Like there's not like these enormous sweeping changes that happen from this right away. So I think that's an important thing to note in all of this.
We actually have a call from someone who voted in a state that has an open primary. Barbara is in Quarryville. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Katie.
Hi.
I have lived in Ohio and voted there. And the open primary is so much better. It gives many more people the chance, and you feel as if you're important enough that they make it possible for you.
Mm.
As it is, I vote in the primaries, but it's nasty because you have to vote Republican if that's the way you're registered, and it is the way I'm registered.
Mm. Yeah, thank you. And that's the thing. You see people, I think a lot of voters, this is just, again, this is sort of apocryphal. This is just what I have heard anecdotally. A lot of voters do like having that choice. They like being trusted to pick a primary, right? But often you see opposition to this from within the primaries, from people who are really worried, you know, party officials, that sort of thing, really worried that, you know, somebody's going to mess with the election or somebody's going to swing it away, that, you know, like they don't vote for the assumed candidate or they don't vote for who the party prefers, that sort of thing. So I think it adds a little bit more of like a wild card element to the proceedings.
Sounds like parties trying to protect their power.
Well, and again, I haven't like talked to enough people to be like, yes, that's absolutely what's happening. But listen, yeah, I think that's it's not unfair to say that like people, party officials, become concerned by proposals like this sometimes.
Let's take another phone call from Larry in Lancaster. Larry, you're on the air.
I just want to comment that I think it's about time that independents were allowed to vote in these primaries. As far as I know, our taxes are being used to pay for these primaries for the benefit of the parties, and the parties either should pay the total bill for the primaries if they want closed primaries, or they should open up the primaries to everybody who's paying taxes.
All right, Larry, thank you very much for your call. That's you know, a point of view that you hear. It's, you know, that he's right, that elections are expensive. Mm. And it is taxpayer money that is paying for the cost of these elections. But the parties are the one that that benefit from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question. Taxpayer money pays for lots of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So where does it stand right now, Katie, the legislation?
So it's been introduced. It hasn't been considered in a committee yet. It is assigned to one. But we have not very long left in this session. So bills that are introduced this far, you know, back, you know, the session ends in January, but it's very unlikely they'll take any votes past like October, November. It's not going to pass. I think it's very unlikely it's going to pass this session.
Okay.
But it may get considered. It may get like a hearing or something. There could be debate on it. And that sets it up to move more next session. So I think there's no question it'll be reintroduced. Scarnati's, you know, going to keep pushing this issue. And now that it's out there, it's in the public consciousness, we may see more traction on it next session.
Does it help? Does it make it more, have more potential to become law if someone in leadership has proposed it, like the president pro tempore of the Senate?
Oh, totally. I think there's no question if there's a high-profile lawmaker who has proposed something, especially with somebody like Scarnati, who has the power to sort of influence what the Senate takes up. Totally. Yeah, he can definitely make his own stuff a priority.
Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears for you and talk a little bit about this is an abbreviated session that's coming up. It hasn't started yet. But Mike Terzai, who's Speaker of the House, one of the things that he said that he would like to see during this abbreviated session is legislation move on reducing the size of the legislature. Again, this is something that you have, when you have a leader, you have the Speaker of the House behind it. But, I mean, this has been around for a few years now. It was actually proposed by another Speaker of the House, former Speaker of the House. Mm. So where does that stand right now?
Gosh, that is it's a tough one because this would require a constitutional amendment, this proposal to shrink the size of the House.
So it would have to happen now.
It would have to happen now, yeah. So this bill, it's sponsored by House Republican Jerry Nowles. It passed last session, 2 years ago, and now it has to pass again this session. It already has gone through like lots of convoluted things. So earlier this session, it was amended to shrink the Senate as well. The Senate took that out, and now it's back in the House as the original proposal to just shrink the House. And so it could, in its current form, it could pass through the House and go on a ballot so voters could consider it. However, it's one of those things. It's a major, major change. And it's unclear at this point if the House has the will to do that because, you know, they are voting to reduce their own power if they vote to reduce their own size. So that's it's a tough sell.
Katie, you not only are WITF Capital Bureau Chief and working for other public radio stations across the state, but you've been working on PA Post, WITF's new news organization that covers policy and politics in Harrisburg. You're doing a podcast on a regular basis, and today you're doing your very first one, right?
Yes, it's going to be recorded today, released tomorrow. But yes, we have launched the PA Post Politics Podcast. It's called State of the State. We're very excited about it. Tomorrow's episode is going to be kind of our soft launch. It's a smaller episode. We're just going to get back into the swing of things. We're doing a legislative update, talking about what has happened this summer when the legislature's been out and there's been less attention on the Capitol, and also looking at what's coming up in these last session days, because this is always this like mad flurry of like major bills getting passed in these next couple of weeks. So it's going to be an important time, and then we also have elections. So it's a sort of a crunch time for a lot of lawmakers right now. So we're trying to get everybody up to speed on what's happening and lay the groundwork for a lot of our coverage in the coming weeks. But yes, PA Post's politics podcast, State of the State, there's going to be a new episode every Thursday. And you can find that. It's not on iTunes yet, but by next week, hopefully, it's going to be on iTunes and, you know, pretty much wherever you get podcasts. And we would really appreciate everybody checking that out.
And also check out papost.org on a daily basis. Sign up for the daily newsletter.
Yes, yes.
And while we're promoting here, speaking of candidates, in October here on Smart Talk, we'll be talking with congressional candidates and candidates for governor as well.
Yes.
So a lot coming up over the next a month or so.
Yeah, can't stress enough. Pennsylvania is so important in these elections.
Katie Meyer, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. A lot of children and adults ride bicycles today, and sometimes they ride bikes that may not be safe or shouldn't be on the road or a bike path. Our guest today recognized that and decided that he would help people repair bikes and make them available to the public. Joining us is Ross Willard with Recycle Bicycle Harrisburg. Mr. Willard, welcome to the program.
Why, thank you, Scott. We're glad to be here.
Also joining us is Kelly Sangree, who is a family biking enthusiast. That's how your title was described to me, Kelly.
Yes, yeah. I have four kids, and I ride with them all over town.
All right. Well, then, you're happy to be described as a family biking enthusiast.
Oh, yes.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Ross Willard, Recycle Bicycle Harrisburg. How did this come to be?
What happened is I'm part of a lot of other ministries and outreaches, and I was feeding people in the street, and I discovered all these kids going by with no brakes. And if I didn't give them food, I figured, well, they can live for 3 weeks getting water. So not giving them food wasn't the end of the world, but if they made it through the next intersection, they might not the next. So I pulled the bike bag out of the bike in the back of the van, started fixing. The bag became a toolbox, it became a van, it became a warehouse. And then I found more volunteers to follow me because most kids, inner city of America, have no brakes. So my admonition to everybody out there listening to Smart Talk is go out to your garage and check and see if your kids' bikes have brakes.
When you say have brakes, I mean, I'm sure there are brakes.
Working brakes.
That's so, I mean, probably there are people who are surprised to hear that because they see so many people riding around on their bikes and think, oh, that bike's in good shape as long as the wheels are turning it looks good and all that, that the bikes are fine. But so many people without brakes.
Oh, it's so easy to ride an unsafe bike. And one of the things that we teach everyone is the ABCs of bike safety. You want to have air in your tires. That's A. You want to make sure your brakes are functioning and stop your bike in a reasonable amount of time. And chain is C. You want to make sure that your chain works properly and is clean and shifts properly.
You know, one of the things that strikes me about this is that it's so basic that most people grew up with a bike, their favorite bike, a bicycle. And we kind of take it for granted that it's in good shape and that the brakes work and that the tires have air. If they don't, we go to the gas station. I'm showing my age now when there were gas stations and put air in it for free. And again, that's showing my age. But that we just kind of take those things for granted. And so I give you credit, Ross, for seeing something that is so basic like this, so simple that people take for granted, but just wasn't happening. And then helping people to make it happen.
And that's really one of the biggest thrills is when I have a father look at me and say, what, the bike had no brakes? And he says, fix it. We are just ecstatic that we can send the kid away. He's safe. And the bikes have changed a little bit. Before, most bikes had back pedal brakes.
Right.
Nowadays, they have hand brakes.
Or some combination.
And in doing so, and it's not the kid's fault. What happens is the noodle brakes, the cable brakes, or somebody steals it and rips them off thinking they're a trick rider.
Oh, geez, we get so many trick riders through Harrisburg.
Okay, trick riders. For those who don't know, what's a trick rider?
Well, they disable their brakes so they can flip the handlebars around and do wheelies and spin like they see on extreme sports on TV and stuff like that. They want to be able to do that. And yes, if you're riding on a BMX track, that's fine. But if you're in traffic, you need brakes. Yeah. You need to be able to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think what many people don't think about is that a bicycle is just like another vehicle on the road.
Exactly.
Following the same rules, same laws, and all those things. Yes, it's much smaller. There's not a motor there and all that. But there are a lot of potential dangers out there.
And that's one of the things that we also try to remind people of is if you have wheels, you are a vehicle, that means you ride on the right. So many of us grew up thinking, oh, you ride on the left, you can see the traffic. Ross has this whole spiel about the physics of how that is very, very wrong.
All right, let's hear that spiel. Yes.
What happens, everybody says, well, I want to see the traffic. You'll see them hit you.
If the bicycle, it's not a laughing matter, but still.
It's true, though. Yeah.
If you're going down the road at 12 mile an hour on a bicycle, and you're going the wrong way, and the speed limit in the city is only 25. If the car's doing 25,
they're going faster. Right.
You add those two numbers together. 12 plus 25 is 37. That's deadly. Whereas if you're riding with traffic, the car is inattentive, they're on their phone or whatever, you're doing 12, the car behind you comes up behind you at 25, you subtract the 12 from 25, it's only 13. 13 versus 37, anything over 20 mile an hour is deadly or major internal body. Mm-hmm. So the law of physics says ride with traffic.
Mm-hmm. There are more and more places that have bike trails.
Yes.
That has to make it a little bit safer.
Well, if you're separated from traffic, you are going to be safer. That's what they do in the Netherlands. They have all of the cars in one area, and then they separate the bike traffic. I would love to see that happen in the U.S., but frankly, we are where we are. So what you have to do is learn where the roads are that you can ride. Like, as a mother, I ride with my kids. But I ride on the safest, quietest streets in Harrisburg. I will make sure that we are on the quietest roads with the minimal traffic. I don't even use the Front Street Trail very often because it's so hard to cross Front Street to get to it. Mm. So what we typically do is we'll ride on the one-lane roads. We'll make sure that we're staying to the right in case a car comes up behind us. But it is very important to be aware of your surroundings. Trails are lovely, but they might not get you where you need to go. And that is one of our biggest things is we ride and we work with riders who are riding for transportation. We have some pleasure riders who come to us. We have people who just want to ride for exercise. But our biggest focus is people who need to ride to work.
Is that becoming more of a thing?
I think
there's a number out there that so many people in the city of Harrisburg have no access to a motor vehicle. And so we are the perfect solution for that because bicycles take no insurance, take no gas, and you can maintain them yourself. So for guys getting out of jail or ladies, we have a lot of halfway house residents come to us. We supply them with transportation that they can maintain so they can get back in society, pay the fine, support their families. The other side of that is students. Every time a student goes to HAC, if they get a loan, everything they buy is part of that loan. It isn't just the books, but if they buy an extra jacket or, you know, a radio or something like that, it goes under student loan in a sense because that money could have been used for that. The bicycle or public transportation helps keep those student loans down, so get education first. So the bicycle is the cheapest way to get started in life.
Yeah, there's different figures out there. It's between $5,000 and $8,000 a year just to operate your car. That doesn't even count the cost of the car itself. That's gas, oil changes, insurance, registration. So if you are riding your bike, you're saving $8,000 a year.
Got an email here from Donna. It says, I'm a casual driver and got a nice aluminum bike from Recycle Bicycle a few years ago. Great service to the community. Ross has unending energy and passion. I think we can tell that just a few minutes here. So let's go back. We talked about how you got the idea for Recycle Bicycle Harrisburg, that you saw that there were so many kids out there riding bikes that had no brakes or no working brakes. So what did you do then? I mean, yes, yes, you went to the back of the pickup or the car with the toolbox and started working on these bikes, but how did it actually become a nonprofit organization?
I started doing it, and it grew, and it was in my backyard, and my township is like, this is getting a little bit too big for that. But a gentleman by the name of Owen Moore from the Harrisburg Bicycle Club said, Ross, go to New York City. And I'm like, why? It's going to cost me money. I'm frugal. So I went to New York City for a bike safety conference, and they showed me a nonprofit bike shop when I was there. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. That's what I'm doing, but on a one-person scale. I found allies like Kelly, Jim Huber, my parts guy, Pam. We've got a ton of volunteers that now have the same heart as I have. And when I'm not around, they do what I do. Jennifer came to us. We call her Wheel Woman. Last night, she worked on a bike. She changed out the derailleur, hooked up the chain, trued the wheel, and reapplied all the brakes on this bike for this young lady. That young lady looked at Jennifer like, wow, if she can do it, I can do it. So I found out that since I started doing it, there are other people like me. I'm not unique. And so we got together, and this is what we do.
Yeah,
just to be clear, you're not doing all the repairs on these bikes. You are showing other people how to do this.
Yeah, it's an education program, largely. And there are nonprofit bike shops all over the country. There's a very famous one in L.A. called the Bike Kitchen. There's one in Carlisle. I don't know the name of that one.
Life Cycle.
I think there's one. We work with a number of them. One place that has sort of a hole that we would like to fill, and anyone who's listening, York could really use one of these, and we would be happy to discuss with you how to set up your own recycle bicycle affiliate, as it were. So
maybe that's you'd be like the McDonald's of recycle bicycle.
It doesn't scale very well because you really need to be there. But yeah.
No, but I could just see the sign: millions and millions of bikes repaired.
Oh yeah, that would be fantastic.
And give it out. All right. So one of the questions we're getting here from listeners is: how do you obtain the bikes? How does someone bring a bike to you and say that, okay, first of all, I'd like to donate this, or here's a bike that could use some repairs? How's it work?
People bring bikes by all the time. We're always open Mondays 12 to 4, Tuesdays 5 to 8, most Saturday mornings. And we get bikes from individuals where their kids have outgrown them. We get them from adults who bought a better bike. We get them from police departments because a police department finds a bike, they hold it for 3 months by law, and they generally give it to us. Some of the police departments deliver them to us. Others, I got to take the trailer and go pick them up. So we always have lots of bikes coming in the door. And we love them all. Even if a guy backs out of the garage, crunches his kid's bike, we want it. Because it has parts to fix the next kid's bike for free.
We cannibalize them.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
It's recycling, you know?
Yeah. So, and in fact, anything that is not usable, the metal gets scrapped, and that's how we pay our light bill. Mm-hmm. So
we have a listener who emails, I have a child's used bike that has flat tires. Would you take that bike? I occasionally have used bikes that end up being unusable. What can I do with them? Can I fill bike tires with an air pump meant for cars? Also, do you get any credit for trade-in bikes? A few questions there.
Absolutely, we'll take any of the bikes. Yes, most bike tires can be inflated with a car pump. Just don't overdo it. And in order to get your own bike, all you have to do is be willing to get your hands dirty. Mm-hmm. So
we should probably give your location and information where people can donate bikes, can come to you to have a bike repaired, or at least be shown how to repair that bike. Or get a bike.
Yeah, well, presently we are at 2266 Atlas Street, and that is right near the Emerald Street Playground in Harrisburg. But one of the things that we wanted to mention, ever since we have begun, ever since Ross got big with this, we've been in borrowed spaces. We've been in donated spaces. And we are currently in a building that has no heat and no plumbing. And the owner has mentioned maybe wanting to sell it at some point. So we are once again looking to find a new home and potentially to own it. We have been saving very diligently. We have a capital campaign that's on our website. And if anyone would be willing to donate cash for our building, we would love to have that donation as
well.
What's
your website?
Recycle. Here, go ahead.
The easiest way to remember it is not to worry about the .net and com.
Right.
Just remember the words, recycle, bicycle, and put in the city, Harrisburg. Mm-hmm. And then for our Facebook page, same thing. Yeah. Recycle, Bicycle, Harrisburg. And you'll find us both places.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And then the one lady had said about, gee, do I get credit? A lot of people, they have a bike and they don't know what to do with it. Bring it down and we'll help you fix it and you keep it. Mm-hmm. The idea is we're empowering people. We teach. They don't realize that it's repairable. The air goes out and they think, oh, I have to buy new tubes and new tires.
We have
generally
those.
It's a case of just pump them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if it can be repaired and it still fits you, sure, we'll fix it for you. If it's a bike that is the wrong size for you, maybe we can help you swap out for a better size bike.
The only thing we require is for the adults, they need a locking system. Too many people come in, they get a bike, and it gets stolen immediately. So for all the adults, you must show up with a lock and a cable or a lock and a chain, or for a minimum donation, we buy them wholesale and pass them along to you.
Stolen bikes, a big problem?
They can
tremendously.
Yeah. We do have a registration program in Harrisburg, and that is one way that we have actually helped some people recover their bikes. We do the registration at our shop. We write down this serial number. We put a little sticker on the very bottom bracket. And in fact, a couple of weeks ago, I found a bike ditched on my street. And I saw it. I was like, oh, this is a lovely bike. What happened here? I turned it over, and there was one of the Harrisburg registration stickers. So I called up Ross. I said, hey, I found one. And we brought it back to the warehouse. And I think we're still in the process of finding the owner.
You've mentioned safety. You mentioned registration with the police department. Mm-hmm. Those are just a few of the things you do besides repairing and restoring the bikes. Bicycle etiquette. You kind of touched on this earlier when talking about on the right side and finding stolen bikes. Bicycle etiquette. What don't people know other than the basic of making sure they ride on the right side?
Ride on the right. Extremely important. Claim your lane when necessary. In other words, the bicyclist is allowed to take the full lane to protect himself, because if the bike moves over too close to the door zone, which is deadly,
or on the shoulder of some of those backcountry roads where people come whipping around the curve, it's actually safer to be right smack dab in the middle of the lane where they can't nudge past you and shove you into the ditch.
And then cars are supposed to give us 4 feet. And we as bike riders have to work with that. In other words, when I'm going through a Chicano, I take the lane. But when I get to the straightaway, then I move over and then the car gives me 4 feet and gets around me. But if I don't take the full lane in the Chicano, they'll squeeze by. So it's a give and take thing. But we on bicyclists and walkers are vulnerable users. Remember that all the time. The law of physics. If the car driver is doing something wrong, yield and get out of their way, because we'd rather be alive and right than
dead. And of course, one of our previous members, he was very big on being polite. You want to be a polite rider. Yield at the stop signs to the pedestrians. Stop at the red lights. You really need to do that, because anyone who flies through a red light, frankly, you're asking for it.
Or stop signs.
It's foolish. Yeah.
Right.
Now, stop signs, yes, you should definitely stop. Now, I will admit I have treated them as yield signs in the past, but it is better to stop fully, assess the situation, let other people through.
What about lights?
Very important. We recently lost a rider, Taylor Childs, some months ago. She was riding home at night from Hershey to Harrisburg. This is a 14-mile ride. She got the bike from us. She had reflectors, but we hadn't had a... I'm sorry. She couldn't afford lights, and we didn't have lights to give her.
For the tail end.
So she was riding as safely as she could, but she got rear-ended. And so one of the things that we are now putting in place is we are running a Light the Night campaign, and we have ordered rear lights for our commuters, and we are trying to start making sure that every commuter, especially as the evenings get longer, have tail lights. We can find a way to set up flashlights for the front light, because that's easy. But the red blinking tail lights, we want to make sure that everyone is visible. So
by law, you must have a solid white light in the front and a red reflector in the rear. But the next step past that is also a red light.
You know, we talked about how people can come to you to donate or to get a bike repaired. We haven't talked about how a child or an adult can obtain a bike. What can they do?
It's easy. They walk in. The parts are free. The bikes are free. You build your own bike. It must fit, and the brakes must work when it leaves. So I always ask, what happened to your old bike? Because we recycle. If you got an old one at home, let's get it down here, even if it's the wrong size, and we'll get it fixed up. But you come build your bike for free. But we use common sense. This is not, the sign out front isn't the free bike store. It is Recycle Bicycle Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm. But we don't have any income limitations or anything like that. You don't have to fill out paperwork. If you're willing to come in and do the work, you can go away with a bike.
Immediately. In other words, within 2 hours, you're on the road. So the guys come out of the halfway houses or ladies, they walk in. I need a bike. Fix the bike up, it's yours. And so they fix it, we teach them, they roll away, they come back next week and say, I got a flat tire. They know how to fix it now. Mm-hmm. And away they go.
What a wonderful service, and congratulations, and thank you very much for being with us today. Ross Dillard of Recycle Bicycle Harrisburg and Kelly Sangree. You're more than a family biking enthusiast, as you're listed here, Kelly. Thank you very much for being with us today.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, one of the segments on the show will be How Millennials Get Their News. May surprise you a little bit. That's coming up on tomorrow's show. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Young women don't often think about their breast health. After all, breast cancer is an old lady disease, right? Well, that's wrong. Breast cancer is an equal opportunity disease affecting women of all ages and backgrounds. The Feel Your Boobies Foundation is on a mission to change how young women think about their breast health, primarily those under the age of 40. That's pre-mammogram age. On this Saturday, the foundation is hosting a Bras Across the Bridge event to raise money for outreach programs that provide breast health education materials to colleges. In the past, participants walked the recognizable chain of 1,600 bras from City Island into downtown Harrisburg, but this year a little bit different. Joining us is Lee Hurst, who's the founder and executive director of the Feel Your Boobies Foundation. Lee, good to see you again.
You too. Good morning.
Also, Sarah Brennan is with us, and Sarah is a breast cancer survivor and also a birthday girl.
Thank you.
So happy birthday and congratulations on, I understand that you're healthy right now?
I am. I feel great. Better than I ever have.
Well,
thank you so much.
That is good to hear. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Lee, you have become, not just you personally, but your foundation has become very recognizable because of bumper stickers. The vehicle you drive when it's seen around central Pennsylvania, it's quite artistic, put it that way, very recognizable. But, you know, when we've talked in the past, you've told me that one of the reasons that you do the things you do is to get attention, bring attention, get attention from especially younger people. But talk about Feel Your Boobies and how it came about.
So we have been around since 2004, which is the year I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I was 33, and like many other young women, I found my lump myself, which was undetected by doctors for a couple years. So when I was finally diagnosed, I realized that I just wasn't paying attention to the traditional messages that were out there, never really thought about breast cancer before. And essentially, I just made some shirts for fun for my friends, and I realized that they sort of took on a life of their own, and they were getting attention because, obviously, the Feel Your Boobies name is something that makes you chuckle. And so over the years, we've really focused on the idea of exactly what you say, finding ways to get people's attention through, you know, aesthetically kind of pleasing artwork or shocking vehicles or just things that people don't really even realize they're engaging with our message. They might take a picture of my car and text it to a friend, and really they've become the message spreader for us. So we see our job as creating the desire for someone to spread our message for us so they become the message spreader.
33. At the age of 33, did you ever think about breast cancer? I mean, I said in the introduction that there are so many people who think of it as just a disease that afflicts older women.
Mm-hmm. No, I can honestly say I don't even know if I had ever said the words before. At the time, I was a marathon runner. I was very health conscious. All of my friends were, too. We were all well-educated. It just wasn't a topic of conversation. It wasn't something that I thought about, and luckily I was in touch with my body. I wasn't doing traditional self-breast exams, but I was just familiar with how my body felt, and I noticed that it felt different. And that's another key message with Feel Your Boobies, is we aren't really promoting the traditional self-breast exam, and that there's a right and a wrong way to do the exam. That's fine if people feel more comfortable doing it that way, but many women find their lumps just by knowing how their body feels. You know, your dog might bump your breast, you might have a baby that bumps your breast, your bra hits something a little bit differently, you feel it when you're showering. It's not because you're doing the exact process, you're just familiar with how things feel. So that's what we try to let the young women know that we serve right now on college campuses, is that you don't have to shy away from doing a self-breast exam simply because you think you might not be doing it correctly. You just need to know what feels normal for you so that you know, well, that's always there. I feel that all the time, and oh, that's a little different. That wasn't there last time. So that's really what our message is to the young women out there.
So at 33, you felt that this wasn't normal for you. You went to the doctor. What happened?
So what happened was, at the time when I first found it, I was living in New York City. That's when the doctors actually didn't feel it at all. I pointed it out during my annual exams. They said, I don't think that's anything to worry about. When I moved back to this area, which is where I'm from, the time had come up for my annual exam, and so I was seeing a new doctor, and I just mentioned it. I said, I know that I have this lump. I just want to let you know, because it's new practice. And it was a nurse practitioner who finally said, you know, I think you should just go get it checked out. Either way, you either want to know it's nothing or that it's something. And so she had me go get a mammogram, and that's when the whole diagnosis process started.
But the other doctors in New York, they just kind of poo-pooed it, or what?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, first of all, they didn't feel it at all. I would wait for them to do their exams of my breast, and then I would say, did you notice this one spot? It just feels a little different, a little harder edge to it. And then they would feel it, but they would say, I don't think that's too much to worry about. I think that's just regular breast tissue.
Mm. So when you went into treatment, how were you treated?
So after I was diagnosed, it was stage one. Luckily, I was worried about that because it had been so long that I knew I had the lump. So a lumpectomy was suggested for me. So that was my surgery, just to remove the lump, not to remove my whole breast. And I went on to have preventative chemo, even though I didn't have lymph node involvement because I was so young. They did suggest a short round of chemo. So I did 4 rounds of chemotherapy, and then 7 weeks of daily radiation, and then finally 5 years of tamoxifen.
So you've been cancer-free for how long?
Almost 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank
on that.
You.
But again, I go back to the age of 33. When you decided, as you described, that you did some artwork on T-shirts and the car and all that, and you decided to create the Feel Your Boobies Foundation, why young people? Why younger women in particular did you decide that that's who you would try to educate on breast health?
Because I think I saw me in a lot of young women. I really thought about, like, how is it possible that I have all of these friends and these people that I've been around and we don't talk about this? And when I saw the reaction from young women when they would see the T-shirt, I realized that it was actually the possibility of creating behavior change was something that I could do with the Feel Your Boobies message, and my background's in educational design and messaging. And so the more I looked at what was out there in terms of breast cancer organizations and what they really focus on, most organizations focus on that post-40 population or the post-diagnosed population. And there aren't many that actually focus 100% on the pre-40. And I believe we are the only national organization that focuses 100% on breast health education. That is all we do. We don't even do necessarily young survivor services. I mean, we happen to connect with people like Sarah because our stories are similar. But our programs and our services really focus on getting those free educational resources out there to places that can use them and put them in front of young women.
How do young women react? I mean, do they think about their breast health?
No, they don't. They don't think it's something that's important for them at that age. And so through our college outreach program, which reaches 200 colleges nationally every year, we provide their those campuses with free breast health education materials through their health centers. We also work through Greek Life's student organizations and athletics to give them different types of curriculum that they can use with other students. And that's created some testimonials that have come back to us to say, like, I attended a program when I was at college, and fast forward, I'm 29, I found a lump, and I know it's because of the way that I learned about Feel Your Boobies, and it just stuck with me. And so we're very proud of that. We don't want young women to get diagnosed, but we do want them to be vigilant and smart, and if Feel Your Boobies can help them with that, then I think that's really important.
Are there young women who have died of breast cancer because they were not educated, because they didn't know what to look for?
Oh, I'm sure.
Because they thought to themselves that, oh, this couldn't be breast cancer, I'm too young.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. And on top of that, young women are often diagnosed with more aggressive breast cancer. So that early detection part is so important, because if it is a more aggressive form or more advanced stage, the sooner you can get into treatment, the better. Mm.
So, Sarah, you were diagnosed at 38. And I saw you nodding your head as Lee was speaking. And so was your story similar to hers?
I have the same exact story as Lee, and in fact, she was the first survivor I was put in touch with, and when she was telling me her story, I couldn't believe it. I mean, she was telling me her story, but it was my story. I found my own lump. I went and had it checked out. I was told, you know, you're young, you're healthy, it's not in your family history, which are all those common misconceptions that you mentioned, and I can't stress enough how important it is to be your own advocate and to push for good care. And I did that. And I felt like something wasn't quite right. You know, they said, oh, you're young, you're healthy. And I finally pushed to have it removed. Again, for peace of mind, because I thought it was impossible for me to actually have breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting the call the next day after my lumpectomy and the same surgery that she had. And he said, I'm so sorry, it's malignant. And I mean, you're in shock. I mean, you just can't believe that it's happening. So I can't stress enough how important it is to just know your body, like Lee said, and to push for good care and be your own advocate.
But you're cancer-free now.
I am cancer-free. I went through a year of treatment. I had an aggressive form, like Lee mentioned, and I feel good, and I'm happy to be here and to be supporting Feel Your Boobies. I don't think that the message gets more simple than feel your boobies, know your body.
Mm. We only have about 2 minutes left. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. So bras across the bridge, Lee.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that Feel Your Boobies is known for is fun events, events that get attention. What is bras across the bridge? I mentioned earlier that it's a little bit different this year.
Yes, we did change the format. This year, bras across the bridge is taking on the more of a bra parade. I guess, model or whatever you want to call it. So what we're doing is decorating bras, and people are wearing them outside of their t-shirts, and teams are joining together to have themes and come up with their own names for their teams and have bra decorations on theme. And what we're doing, why we're doing that is because even though the bra chain that we stretched across the bridge last year and years prior is very visually stimulating, what we found were people that were coming out, like Sarah, who was doing it with family and friends to honor their good health, they want to spend time together. And when we do the bra chain, a lot of times people are spread apart and holding the chain. So we're hoping that this is still fun and happy and everybody has a good time and we raise a lot of money, but it's people can spend time together.
So how exactly do you raise money?
So people register through our website, feelyourboobies.com. There's a $30 registration fee. And then the teams that are created, if you do it with friends and family, you can share your fundraising page once you register and ask people to donate through our online system to support you.
And the money goes to what?
The money, 100% of the money supports our college outreach program. It takes us about $500 to support each school that we work with. So this is our primary fundraiser to make sure we have money to do that program each year.
You mentioned 200 colleges across the country. Would you like to reach more?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'd like to work more deeply with the schools that we're at, and we'd also like to add more schools into our program.
Mm-hmm. Are most of them around here, or are they across
the
country?
No, we're in 43 states, so we are national, and we just opened a Maryland office where we're working more closely with our schools in the Maryland, D.C. area to build our presence there and to better support the schools there, so we're hoping to continue to do that type of thing.
Quickly, when should a woman get a mammogram?
Right now, the guidelines still say age 40.
But if, just as we've been talking about, something's not right.
Yes, please visit your doctor and push to get more testing.
Lee Hurst, founder, executive director of Feel Your Boobies Foundation, breast cancer survivor Sarah Brennan, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sounds like a fun event this week.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.